Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are covering season 6 of Game of Thrones with, why did I do it in this order? Episode 1, The Red Woman, and episode 2, Home.
They are. And we are going to have caveats this time, and they include that there will be cursing, there will be spoilers, and we're having things to drink. What are you having to drink?
I am having box wine from Kroger. It is the Provisions Red Blend. It's a Friday night and I'm getting crazy.
Ooh, yeah, let's do it. Well, and red is so appropriate for Game of Thrones. I'm going to just throw this out there. My Big Macs and Burgundy book, which I really love, is all about wine pairing. They have wine pairings, including for Game of Thrones and for Peaky Blinders and stuff like that. And the one that they have, I could not find, otherwise I would have done it ages ago, is something called Bull's Blood. I think it's from the Republic of Georgia. And if I'd been thinking about it, I would have asked your brothers to bring some back. But it is a red from there. It's supposed to be like super like beefy, kind of very, very dark. Kind of disappointing that I don't have it. But in any case, I'm having the Red Woman cocktail out of the Game of Thrones cocktail book. This one, and of course I had to because it's the Red Woman episode. And there, actually, yeah, there's stuff in both episodes. So this calls for 3 ounces of cherry vodka. I don't have cherry vodka, so I had cherry rum, which I like much better anyway. 2 ounces of tequila, 2 ounces of Fireball, 2 tablespoons grenadine, 3/4 of a cup pineapple juice. It calls for sanding sugar that you dye black. I don't have that, so I used that sparkly silver stuff we've used before. It's supposed to be just on the rim of the glass, but I put some in the drink itself to make it look a little bit cooler. It does look cool. And remarkably, I'm kind of liking it. It made enough for 2 giant glasses. And so the other one is sitting in a shaker in the refrigerator, and we'll see what happens with that. What are our sections for episode 1 of your maybe favorite season, season 6?
We'll see. I don't know if it's going to top season 1 for me, but I haven't rewatched the season in a little while, so we'll see. The sections are, there's so many fucking sections for this episode. The Night's Watch, Braavos, King's Landing, Winterfell, Northern Road, Dorne, Marine Road, Dothraki. Dear Lord.
Yeah.
Okay, where do we want to start?
I feel like Braavos is really short.
Okay, fine. Do you want to start with that?
Sure. We've got Arya, who is blind, and she's still alive, though, which I had been concerned about at the end of season 5, whether she was going to live or not. She is blind. She is begging on a street corner in Braavos. The waif appears. She throws a staff at her and basically makes her fight. She keeps hitting her, and Arya, she's kind of fighting back in fear. She's panicked because she can't see. And at the end of it, the waif says, "I'll be back tomorrow." And that's basically the lesson for Arya for this episode.
Sure. Do you want to do the whole Winterfell and Northern Road bit?
Sure.
Do you want to combine them into one?
Yeah, I think I did in my notes, so sure.
Okay, perfect. All right, well, I'll start. I'll just do it. Ramsay mourns Miranda and plans to avenge her, but then he also says, just feed her body to the hounds. So not much love lost there. He says, so Sansa and Theon are gone, and he has sent hounds after them and some hunters, like the best hunters he has. And then Roose says that if Ramsay doesn't have an heir with Sansa, then he has to hope for his baby to be a boy and like for that boy to inherit rather than Ramsay. So it's a threat to Ramsay.
Right. But he also says that he's grateful to Ramsay for the win. Isn't that great? But he knows he played games with Sansa and with Theon, and these were potential allies for the North, and he's, you know, super pissed.
Okay. And then on the Northern Road, Theon and Sansa are running in the forest, much like Robin Hood and Little John. And I don't know why you were thinking that. And have to cross a mostly frozen river. they go through it together to throw off the hound's scent. They make it to a fallen tree, but Sansa is freezing and Theon hugs her for warmth. They hear the hounds and Theon says he'll distract them while she hides, and he advises her to go to Castle Black, just keep going north. The hounds find Sansa anyway, but Brienne and Podrick come in.
She's not really hiding all that.
She's not, but Brienne and Podrick come to the rescue and fight off Ramsay's men. Podrick has learned how to fight, and so he's able to like fend for himself a little bit more.
All I can say is, go Podrick! Go Podrick!
Theon picked up a sword and helps Podrick. Brienne, after everybody else is dead, well, not everybody, the Ramsay's men are dead. Brienne vows the same thing to Sansa that she did to Catelyn, and this time Sansa accepts, and Podrick even helps her with her part of the vow, and so now that's all good. Do you want to do the whole, well, we can do Dorne next.
Yeah, there's not much to Dorne. So Dorne and Ilaria are seeming to get along. She's escorting him back to his throne, and they're talking about Oberyn and how he had sex with everybody. And the news comes that Raven, I guess, delivers a note about Myrcella. And Dorne looks up at Ilaria. She stabs him in the chest. The Sands, who happen to be hanging around there, stab his guards. And she's basically, what she says to him is, a weak man will never rule Dorne again. And that is her coup. They win.
Okay. King's Landing, one thing, a good thing about there being many sections is that we don't spend a lot of time in any of them. King's Landing, the ship from Dorne arrives, and Cersei looks forward to seeing her daughter, who is actually dead. Jaime and Cersei talk about what will happen to Marcella now that she's dead. Will she decay? Yeah. She talks about the prophecy.
Cersei's really upset. I'm just throwing that in there.
She is upset. Her daughter just died.
No, I said obsessed with the death and the decay end of it. It's kind of warped.
Yeah, well, you deal with death in different ways. She talks about the prophecy from before, and now she really believes it. And Jaime has probably my least favorite line from him. Fuck everyone who isn't us. You already fuck each other. You don't need everybody else. Anyway, Septa Onella is reading to Margaery the Seven-Pointed Star, and Margaery just wants to know about her brother, and Septa Onella is not giving her any information. And the High Sparrow talks to Margaery about how much Tommen misses her, and she's like, well, can I go and see my brother and my husband? And he's like, no, I'm just here to tell you how much they miss you, and that's it. Just to like egg you on, try and get you to confess. And to be completely frank, I think that Margaery's crimes are way less awful as Ben Cersei's, so I don't see why it would be as big of a deal for her to confess. I guess if she confesses, it makes Loras guilty, but at the same time, get yourself out of that situation. Your brother, well, I can't say he chose this way of life. I mean, you are who you are, and you like who you like, but I think that in general, he made his own mess by not being more careful. Not that he should have had to be, be more careful, but still, he was the one who was lax and all that, and so he has to suffer some consequences, not necessarily this is kind of ridiculous, but either way, you shouldn't be punished for being gay, but that's how life is, I guess, at that point, even though Oberyn was very openly bi, and that didn't really seem to bother anybody, but I guess since it's Loras, it matters. I guess he just wasn't open about it. Like, I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. What's the problem? I guess in the eyes of the very, like, crazy church, I guess it's a problem. But, like, I still don't understand why it's a problem for everybody else, you know?
Well, you mean about Loras being gay?
Yeah.
You did not grow up in a different time. Let's put it that way.
I'm glad I didn't. Anyway,
and that may be true, but I can tell you that there has been stigma about that in, you know, it goes in waves how serious it is, but in different times that has been kind of a thing.
My problem is that Oberyn was very open about it, and yet like he didn't get punished for it in the same way Loras is. I think that's my problem.
Well, anyway. No, I think what the real issue was with Oberyn is that he had a lot of power on his own. He's not,
The difference between Loras and Oberyn is that Loras is not the power of the
Tyrells. He's the heir.
Aletta is the power, but Aletta's the real power.
Sure.
And you know, from a leverage standpoint, and that's what this show is all about, is leverage, right? From a leverage standpoint, he's expendable.
Sure. All right. How about you do Marine, then I do Rhode / Dothraki.
Okay. Oh boy, Marine. yeah, so in that, let me go back to my notes on Marine. Marine. All right. We got,
I was going to say, do you need me to do it? Like,
no, we got Tyrion and Varys, and they have.
Seems like your notes are very organized, Mother.
That was helpful.
I was kidding.
That didn't.
You've said it to me in the past.
Usually in response to something you started. So there we go. So Meereen, we've got Tyrion and Varys, and they dress down to go down into like the marketplace to see how the common people are living in Meereen and whether they can find out, you know, what their complaints are so that they can see.
Something Daenerys never did because she's such an uppity bitch.
Right, but Varys points out to Tyrion, it's like, everyone knows you're rich just by the way you act. Everyone knows you're rich because how many little dwarves are running around in Meereen, you know, free and stuff. But they, as they're walking around, Tyrion tries to give alms to a woman for her baby, and she misunderstands him, and Varys has to correct his Valyrian because his Valyrian sucks. Then they see there is graffiti about, you know, kill the masters, and underneath it, it says, Mysa is a master, which is kind of one of your points. Yes, she is.
Big shocker.
And
like, what?
Yeah, Tyrion, they go and they again hear a red priest who is speaking to the people about, oh no, Daenerys is good. She's going to come back. She's awesome. You got to stand up for yourselves, et cetera, et cetera. And Tyrion realizes they all think that the poor people think that Dany has abandoned them, which of course she did.
She literally did.
While they're there discussing Daenerys's obvious flaw,
many flaws.
The bells ring out, and there are people running away from the docks. Varys and Tyrion go down to the docks, and the entire fleet is on fire. So obviously Daenerys does not have a fleet to take her to Westeros.
Okay, so Rhode / Dothraki, Jorah and Dario are looking for Dany and find clues left from Drogon, aka like skulls. And Jorah's grayscale has spread more. They're talking about how, oh yeah, I just can't stay away from her. I'm obsessed with her, blah, blah, blah. Daenerys is so great, blah, blah, blah.
I love this line. There's a great line in here though, where both of them say, I want to see the world when she is done conquering it.
That's a great way of putting it. Conquering.
Yeah.
And they find the tracks from the Dothraki horde and the ring. She's lucky as fuck that it was a full horde and not just a single fucking horse. Because if it was anything else, they would not have gotten that clue. And right. So she's thanking her lucky stars. Jorah's like, well, I know where she's going now. Once she reveals who she is, they're taking her to Vyse Dothrak, where all the widows are supposed to go. And
but we mentioned this
forever ago.
I would mention that the terrain changes rather oddly from Northern Ireland to the Arabian Desert. Here we go.
Okay. Daenerys is treated as a prisoner. She has her hands tied to like a rope that is like on the, like handled by a person on a horse. And so she has to walk with the horde rather than ride a horse. She overhears their conversations because she understands the Dothraki language. And it gets more like crude and all that stuff. But one line I love from this conversation between these two guys is, what do you think? And he says, pretty eyes, but she's an idiot. I love that line so fucking much.
Well, the whole time she's just listening to this like, I hate all of you.
They make it to camp and she is brought to the new Cal, who's Cal Morrow. Daenerys reveals she knows Dothraki and gives her titles, and they laugh at her, which I love. I love the way the Dothraki are treating her. I absolutely, like, obviously, like, don't sexualize her and all that stuff, because it does get weird, but she stops it. But, like, I love them just not giving a shit about anything to do with Daenerys. She refuses to lie with the Khal, even though he's like, I'm gonna put a baby in your belly, and he's like, and she's like, nah, you're not. And she finally reveals she was Drogo's wife. I don't know why she waited until now, but okay. Anyway, he asks forgiveness and he says no one will lie with her. She asks to be escorted back to Meereen, but they will take her to Baes Dothrak, where all the other widows are supposed to be brought. And so that is that.
Well, and that's where they live out their days. It's like they're put in a convent almost.
They can't really do anything. No one will lie with them within the Dothraki law. So, I mean, whatever. I do love
some of these exchanges though. Like Khal Morrow and his guys are talking about how she's beautiful and the five best things in life, including seeing a beautiful woman
naked. It was very much so. It was a lot like the Spanish Inquisition sketch from Monty Python of just adding things to the list that are like the best things or the best ways of torture. It's right, very similar.
At the end, and Khal Morrow is like, so among the five best things in life are...
Exactly. It's very Monty Python.
Super funny. I
was going to mention that, but I didn't write it down. But it was worth it. It just would have taken too long. All right, Night's Watch, Mom.
Night's Watch. Oh, God. So the episode actually begins with, yes, my friend, who, if you had visuals, what you would know is Ghost. Ghost is
Howling. You don't have visuals. I'm sorry, listeners. You don't. It's Ghost. Because Ghost
is awesome. But Ghost is howling and because he knows. And he's busting at the door. The howling gets Davos's attention. And Davos hears it. He goes out and he sees John underneath this sign that calls him a traitor. There are others of the watch respond. Ed, of course, is one of the first people to get there, and there's a couple of others. And Davos is like, God, we've got to get him inside, because he realizes what's going on, that this is clearly a rebellion. And so they bring him into the Lord Commander's office. They put him on a desk in the office, dead body. And you know, they're kind of like acting like he's mostly dead. And like, I kept expecting someone to press on his stomach to see if he'd say
Princess Bride, just to see.
Yeah, Princess Bride style. No, he's just mostly
put something coated in chocolate in his mouth and maybe it will work.
Yeah, but you know, no.
He's just mostly dead.
He's not just mostly dead. He's dead dead.
He's dead as a doornail.
Right. So they're all in there. Melisandre hears them, knocks on the door. She says she saw, you know, she just is completely bereft of any, you know, will to live at this point, because she's like, I saw John in the flames. He was fighting at Winterfell. I don't know what the
fuck's going on here. Wow, it used to be Stannis, but now it's John. Funny how life works that way. When someone dies, it changes.
Well, no, what
she I was kidding, Mom. Just go ahead.
She had seen him fighting in the flames with, I think she believed it was with Stannis, which is why I think they were pushing so hard for John to go with Stannis. But that obviously did not happen. And so I think she's just like, I don't even know what to believe anymore. I don't know what the hell is going on. They hear, you know, like the other guys banging on the door. And they are all kind of expecting that they're going to die. The Night's Watch is meeting. Sir Alistair, you know, is running stuff. And he's like, yep, I killed John, and so did Ollie, and so did these other officers. And some of the guys call him a murderer. And he's like, yeah, that was treason. But we had to, because John let these wildlings through. It's the first time it's happened in thousands of years. And it's terrible. Ollie's looking on in approval, and basically Alistair's like, this is the way it's going to be. Then we go back inside the office, and Ghost is whimpering at John's body, and Davos and Ed discuss, you know, basically how they're going to have to fight if they're stuck in there, and they need to get more help. And as he put, because he wanted to have Ghost brought in, because he asked, you know, does the wolf know yet? All right, we need as much help as we can get. We need to get Ghost in here with us. You know, there are other people that whose lives he saved. Get them, meaning the wildlings. And Ed's like, I'm on it. You guys, you know, batten down the hatches, and I'll be back as soon as I can. Alistair then is pounding on the door,
Ghost is pissed. And he starts offering amnesty. He's a really bad liar, by the way. He's just really, really awful. But it's funny because Davos taunts him. And he's like, hey, yeah. Yeah, if you're going to give me stuff, give me, like, I don't know, some mutton. I want some of that. And, you know, I want some additional stuff. He's just really kind of fucking with him, which I love.
I love Davos. He's so fucking funny in this, in these two episodes. He's fucking hilarious.
He is. But Alice is like, well, you gotta surrender by nightfall, or we're coming in and we're killing everybody. Then we see the Red Woman.
This is the weirdest shit ever.
It is the weirdest shit either. She is, you know, by the fire. She's very, very sad. She goes to the mirror. She gets naked. Of course, she looks amazing. This actress is amazing. And then she takes off her necklace. And
Who's she married to again? Or like partners with?
Guy Pearce. The actor. Right. Yeah. The actor. Yeah. So Guy Pearce is pretty awesome from Memento and other things.
mostly from Memento.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's in a bunch of other stuff. She takes off her necklace. And oh my God, she's this old, like hundreds and hundreds of years old, balding woman. She has barely any, yeah, I mean, she's barely any hair, which of course it's all of our fear that we're going to end up looking like this, right? But we all do.
It's Mother Gothel from Tangled.
Yes.
But without the magic hair, it's a magic necklace.
Sagging and scary, and it's basically terrifying.
Yeah.
So that's the episode.
Mm-hmm.
What were your best parts?
Theon for doing a solid for Sansa. It's very sweet. Bran and Podrick for saving the day. Ed is hilarious. And also, he's taking this very seriously. He's going to like go talk to the wildlings, who are technically were his enemies, just to help out an old friend who just died, and to help like defend the thing he just built up. And to just defend his legacy and all that stuff. It's very noble of him. Davos is absolutely hilarious. The performances are great. Like Lena Headey has this moment when the boat's coming ashore from Dorne and she notices the dead body like covered in a golden shroud, and her face just changes, and it's so devastating, if I cared. But if I cared about Cersei Lannister, it would be very devastating. Tyrion, for at least trying to be a people's person, like the people's princess, but like the people's overlord. But I mean, like, he at least is trying to understand the working man's condition. But at least he's trying, like Daenerys, who just stayed on her high horse. And also the Dothraki not taking Dany seriously. Like, I find that so fucking hilarious that she has everybody bowing down to her wherever she is, and now these people just don't give a shit about who you are. Well, at least before she explains who she was, like before they find out she was a cow's wife, it's like, yeah, no, she's an idiot, and she's just wandering around in the Northern Island all by herself for no fucking reason. And also, like, she's just defiantly looking at us like that means anything. She's giving out all these titles like it means something. It doesn't. And she thinks she can get by on that until her hand is forced and she has to say she was a cow's wife. And I think that's just very funny that they just don't care.
Okay, so I did not like this episode nearly as much as you did.
Oh, okay.
I do absolutely love Davos. He's fabulous. I love, of course, Ghost, because Ghost rocks. Ed is awesome. I love Brienne in this. I love Podrick. I love Theon. I did not mention, when I was doing Dorne, because I guess this is more Dorne than King's Landing, although it technically happens in King's Landing, is one of the Sands kills Trystane.
He was painting like the rocks that would be put on Marcella's like corpse.
Oh, I didn't even notice
at the beginning of that part, that section. But I don't know whether or not they use it, but like, where are they? Are they still in Dorne? I guess they're still
no,
in Dorne.
They're in King's Landing. He went with them on the boat.
Right. And so he's on the boat. And yeah, I guess they did use those rocks. We'll see them in the next episode.
Whatever. So one of the sand, the two other sands, one of them was with Ilaria and Dorne, I guess she's the favorite that's still in Dorne. The other two come in, they're like, hey, how are we going to kill you?
And which, or which one of us? And he picks the girl with the whip, and the girl with the spear is a little impatient, whatever. And she just
like shoves it right through his skull.
I like that. I like the marine graffiti, but I'll be honest with you, and I'm just saying this in response to some of your best parts. I didn't find it a worst part. I just didn't find it that amazing. This thing with the Dothraki not giving a shit about Daenerys.
I just found it funny.
Yeah, it is funny. And I think what my problem was when I originally watched this, and I still get those feelings of when I originally watched this episode, I felt like they were just kind of being demeaning because she was a girl. And there's a lot of that.
Oh, there's a lot of that. But like, I like the parts where they're just demeaning because she just thinks she's so high and mighty.
Right, right. But
those are the parts I pointed out. The other shit about like trying to like impregnate her, no.
Yeah, I think, you know, the way it read to me initially, and it still does on some level, is that, you know, they're just being demeaning to her because she is female and that's their culture. I do think it is hilarious the way it's done, but there's some part of me that doesn't find it like super fun. Like, yeah, and I think that's part of my problem. Like, my feelings toward Daenerys have changed having watched the entirety of the show, but I still have some of that initial response. And so my initial response also to this episode was not super positive. But what were your worst parts?
Alistair. He just is like, yeah, we murdered him. What you gonna do about it? I have the power now, bitches. It's like, what? Fuck you. Like, you can point, you literally said, yeah, what we did was technically treason. But hey, what are you gonna do about it? We're still in charge. Like, that's something wrong. And John still put you in a place of power. So, like, what is your plan here, dude? And like there are not going to be consequences to your actions. It's ridiculous. Ramsay, he's a horrible little bastard, and
he's a super creep.
He also being just like, yeah, no, Miranda, you meant so much to me. Oh my god, I'm gonna avenge your death, but also just feed her to the dogs. She's good meat. It's like, what the fuck, dude? The Waif for just being a total bitch, and like at least they're like interacting with Arya a little bit more than a lot of other people are, but knocking over her fucking cup when she's fucking blind and kicking her ass, like that's cruel. Alaria, I just don't care for Alaria and this whole revolution bullshit, and you did kill a child, so I mean, you've accomplished your goal, Alaria. I hope you have a very happy life now that you've killed a lot of people. I hope you have a great life. Melisandre for being weird and turning into a grandma. I didn't need to see that. I definitely didn't need to see her naked. Like, if she was wearing like a nightdress or something and then she changed, that I feel like I'd feel it differently, but seeing her naked, like old body, I did not need to see that.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, yeah, as a person who is on the other side.
You were not that old.
I'm not. But you know, you do start to see things like that in yourself, like, holy shit, am I gonna end up that way? And you know, that would be pretty terrifying. And the fact that you don't have like any of the left, it, you know, is a little scary. So my worst parts obviously are Alistair, fucking awful. Ramsay, my feelings towards him are just getting progressively worse. Cersei, because I don't feel sorry for Cersei. I just kind of feel like I don't like Cersei. I don't like the High Sparrow in this either. He's starting to get that power thing going on.
Mm-hmm. He's becoming what he hates.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Much like everybody else in this show, they're becoming what they hate.
Yeah, I have become what I have beheld, and I am a power-hungry loser. And the Waif, I don't like the Waif.
She's such a bitch.
I know that you really liked, you know, some of the stuff with Tyrion and stuff like that. I just don't care.
I liked Tyrion making, like, at least making an effort. That's it.
Understood. What grade did you give this episode?
B+. I think it's fine. Mm-hmm. I think it's better than season 5. Just in general, I think it's a pretty mediocre episode altogether, but I think at least stuff is happening. And it is a setup episode. I'm not going to say it isn't, but I like the characters that were really headlining this, like Davos. Like, I love Davos. I'm glad he had like his time to shine. And just in general, I think like some of the stuff that was in this episode, I just liked. So like, especially like the Theon's protecting Sansa, Brienne finally like getting the chance to be Sansa's like guard and all that stuff. Like, I'm glad that she's finally accepting the help and all that stuff. So, I mean, it's just, I don't know. I liked it. Fine. It's okay. It's not an A or an A minus. It's just a B plus. It's fine.
Yeah, we've got very different opinions about this. I gave it initially a C minus, and I have bumped it up to a C. I don't like this episode.
Okay, fine. I'll give it a B because of the grandma bullshit, but otherwise I'm not going lower than that.
Can I give my reasons? And I'm not trying to persuade you. I'm just saying that for me, this episode, much like the very first time I saw this episode, it's like, get on with it. Like, I want to know what the fuck is happening with like some of these storylines, and I really don't
give a storyline.
Well, with John, like,
they covered basically everything, Mom.
Okay. I would love to have an opportunity to actually voice an opinion without being cut off. I feel like this episode, everyone anticipates that something is going to happen with him. And that storyline particularly is compelling to me, and it drags horribly. There's a lot of nothing, nothing, nothing. The Winterfell stuff, you know, like the Roose being pissed at Ramsay, I don't give a fuck about any of that. I felt like they dragged a bunch of stuff in King's Landing. And King's Landing, to me, didn't even need to be part of this episode. They could have bumped all that to the next episode, and I would not have cared. But, you know, the cliffhanger stuff, they really aren't addressing. They spend, like, way too much time in King's Landing, way too much time in Dorne. Don't give a fuck about that. Don't give a thousand fucks, none, zero, about Meereen. Or what's happening with Daenerys. I just don't care. And honestly, you know, I was curious about Arya. I was worried about her. So, like, the short and the way they do it being short and fairly simple is okay. But the vast majority of this, I don't give a fuck about. So I just did not feel like this was a really well-constructed episode, especially in the big storyline. It just bugged the shit out of me. The first time I saw it, it did not improve on a rewatch. Let's go
as
on.
As a rebuttal, I'd like to say that hindsight's 20/20. Obviously, this is a rewatch. We know where these characters go and all that stuff. I'm not saying that it especially informs my opinion, but I just found myself being happier seeing certain characters like having good moments. Like the Sansa and Theon is like a pretty sizable part of this episode that I really like seeing. Like, Theon has grown some of his, like, metaphorical balls back.
I agree.
He's actually helping her. And he's being selfless for once. And yeah. I love seeing that. And I don't think you really emphasized that a lot. But I really do love seeing that. And
I agree. I need to clarify. I'm very, very motivated, if it's not abundantly clear, about Stark storyline, real Stark storylines, not three-eyed Raiden bullshit. We're gonna get to, and I need to say this because I didn't say it in my defense of season 5, which is there's no three-eyed Raven bullshit. It's coming back in season 6. But I will say this up front. I feel like this is a very, very good season. So I don't want to diminish it. And my rating of this episode really may not factor in too much in the overall rating of the season. All I'm saying is this episode just wasn't that great to me. There are some really good things in it. I would have liked to spend a little more time like with the Theon and Sansa and all of that. I would have liked to spend a little more time with moving the story, actually, with Davos and those guys. But instead, we got a whole lot of Meereen and
we didn't King get that much of Meereen, Mom. We
and
really
Dorne.
Didn't. And Dorne was like a footnote. Like, listen, I think you're thinking of this as like we were in Dorne and Meereen for all of the episode. We weren't. And I probably would have bitched about it if we were. I would like to say my piece, please. So what I'm saying, just in general, I think that it was gutsy of them to, like, dangle the John carrot and to, like, let at least the politics of what just happened kind of play out a little bit. Of, like, having, oh, yeah, no, we're totally admitting that we just killed the Lord Commander. We're in charge now. What are you going to do about it? Kind of thing going on. Because they had to have had a plan at some point. It wasn't probably a really well thought out plan, but they probably had one at one point. Anyway, I think in general, it's with excluding the whole, like, John debacle, like, you, obviously, they're dragging it out a little bit, and I do think it should have been in the first episode when most of that plot happened, but again, hindsight's 2020. But it just, I don't know, I think looking back, it's not as big of a road bump as I recalled, and so it's not like they're going to leave you hanging for much longer. It really, it, whatever. And honestly, if they had done what they do in episode 2 in the first episode, I probably would have just been like, wow, you really just copped out, and you really didn't even try to have, like, this happen, or this, like, thing to have implications or anything like that. I would have been like, yeah, no, you didn't even try, did you? And so I think in general, it's like, it, again, if they had done what they do in episode 2 in the first episode, I don't think I would have liked this episode as much. Anyway, my overall grade is going to stay, I'm going to make it a B because I agree not much happens in this episode, but I'm not going to drag it further down. All right, episode 2 is Home. The sections are Night's Watch, shocker.
You're starting there? No, there's north.
No, Mom, I haven't read all the sections yet. The sections are Night's Watch, Beyond the Wall, King's Landing, Marine, Bravos, Winterfell, Northern Road, and Pike.
Yeah, so I feel like there's some of these things are pretty short. For instance, I feel like we save Castle Black for last.
Well, obviously.
I kind of want to start maybe getting rid of Bravos, seems pretty short.
All right, do Bravos then.
We've got the Waif and Arya, and they fight again. And, you know, Arya's swinging, and no one's there. And then Jaqen appears. And he asks her name. She says the girl has no name, and it's a test, and it keeps going on and on. And she finally, you know, gets it right and says the girl has no name. But he says, all right, well, you can come back to the House of Black and White, basically. She is still blind, but she's not a beggar anymore. So she leaves her bowl for begging by the side of the road. And that's mm-hmm.
I'll do Northern Road / Pike because they kind of go hand in hand. Okay. Brienne tells Sansa about Arya when, like, how she saw Arya on the road. And Sansa's clearly very relieved that she's even alive. Because she didn't know where the fuck she was. And so, and she asked how she looked, and Brienne says, oh, she looked good, but she wasn't dressed like a lady should. And then Sansa's like, no, she wouldn't be. And it's clear she misses her sister, even though they would get on each other's nerves. Like, again, sisters, like, they'll fight, but they are always going to love each other, and they don't want anything bad to happen. And true. So Theon is worried that Jon will kill him once they get to Castle Black, and so he's going to split early and go home to Pike. Because that worked so well last time. But I also...
Well, I think he's convinced that John's going to kill him.
I honestly wouldn't blame John, but I mean, either way, even if he explained the whole thing that happened with the brothers, like, he still betrayed Rob and killed Sir Roderick. So, I mean, yeah. Then at Pike, apparently, this is what I was confused about, because we kept saying, oh yeah, they totally, like, invaded Moat Cailin. They invaded Deepwood Mott, not Moat Cailin initially. That's why I kept saying they were in Moat Cailin, and that's why I was confused. So anyway, Deepwood Mott has been taken back by the Glovers. And Baelon is being a misogynistic asshole, like he always is. And
he's even worse than that. He's just terrible in general.
Yep. Yara is just trying to be like, yeah, no, I don't apologize for like trying to get Theon. I lost like several brothers over the years and I didn't want to lose another one. I'm not sorry about it. And he's just like, yeah, no, well, this is a time for you to shut up. And so he goes, I'm sorry.
Bail
I wrote
on.
This really, I know, Mom. I wrote this down really funny. Thing, he goes on a rickety Balon goes on a rickety bridge at night in the pouring rain, and I wrote down those fish fucks don't deserve this kind of infrastructure.
They don't. I will say, and I know I've said this before, when we first saw Pike come up in the credits, it is like really kind of cool looking the way that this castle is built. But there are these rope bridges in between. It's very defensible. Like, you know, you roll up your rope bridge and nobody can get to you.
Anyway,
I want to say the line that came to me, which is he comes across a hooded figure, and it felt very Deathly Hallows to me. Like when they're talking about,
who are you
the
going
three
to cross
brothers.
Death? He runs into his brother Euron, who we've never heard about, who was thought that, who everyone thought went crazy on a voyage somewhere in like the Jade Sea or something, and like was like just going absolutely insane and about to like jump overboard, but it's like his men stopped him, and then he cut out all the men's tongues. It was a weird time in his life. It was crazy
days. Yeah, they could not tell the tale.
He calls himself the Drowned God. He's like, I am the Drowned God. It's like Harry Potter just saying, I am the Chosen One. It's like, you want to hit him over the head with a newspaper.
The Drowned God is their god. We've heard of the Drowned God.
I'm well aware of that, Mom. I'm just saying that him calling himself that makes you want to hit him over the head with a newspaper. Anyway, he asks his brother to let him rule now, which is absolutely hilarious. He's just like, hey, step aside. It's my turn now. And then Balon's like, fuck no, it isn't. And you haven't been here in what, years? Like, no. And he throws Balon off the bridge, which is hilarious to me. Then Balon's body is wrapped in seaweed and put into a crab trap and returned to the sea.
A crab trap that floats. It's like, what is this supposed to be? I mean, don't you want to
see? No, he's put on like buoys or something. It's weird. Yara wants to have the throne, but the law doesn't let her simply like claim it, even though she's like the obvious choice. But there are certain like things that you have to pass or whatever, and so
I want to clarify, they talk about a king's moot thing. I want you to be eternally grateful that you don't hear anything about this Greyjoy succession other than the minimal stuff you learn about it in this season, because as much as it fucking drags in this season, it is unbelievably interminable in the books. And I do want to point out just in passing that at the end of book 5 in the book, Yara is at Deepwood Mott when it is attacked. So like, and she's sleeping with some guy at that point. It's a long, long, long different
story. I don't care, Mom.
Yeah, you're not the only listener, okay? So,
Mom, I'm aware of that, but I don't care who Yara was sleeping with. That's my point.
I wasn't getting into that. My point is that this whole Greyjoy storyline is much more elaborate in the books, and I'm appreciating the showrunners for cutting it out. Okay? Great. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Where do you want to go next? We have King's Landing, we have Marine. Marine's pretty short. Do you want to do Marine? You get an iconic line.
Did I pay attention to the iconic line?
You have to have known.
Oh, I do. I do.
Is.
And I didn't actually use my glass for this, but okay, yes. Yeah, so Tyrion is drinking, and he is talking to what is basically his small council at this point, which is Varys, Grey Worm, Missandei, and that's basically it, isn't it? They're sitting around in the penthouse, and he's drinking, and they talk about how Astapor and Young Guy have stopped asking for aid, and Tyrion's kind of like, that's good, and why would that be? It's because they've gone back to having slaves. Dragons in the basement are not eating anymore. Missandei is like, yeah, this is not good, and Tyrion's like, this is what happens. If you lock up dragons, they waste away and die. And they're like, how do you know this? And he's like, I drink and I know things. And I'm like, yes, this is one of the best Tyrion lines ever. I have glasses to this effect. So Tyrion decides he's going to let him out. And I do want, and I know
let me just specify. He will free them of their chains, not let them out of the pyramid.
He should be let, right. So there is a lengthy thought that there are three dragons, and hey, maybe who's going to ride the third dragon? This was a lot of the speculation that went forward, because there are three dragons. Maybe there will be three dragon riders. Obviously, Daenerys is one of them. There's a little discussion about who the second and third would be. So Tyrion goes down there. He is scared of the dragons, but he wants to make it clear, because he thinks they're very smart, that he is their friend. He's here to help. Don't eat the help.
I was about to say, I'm friends with your mother. I'm here to help. Don't eat the help.
Yeah, he unchains the first one, and the second one's like, hey, and gives the side of the neck, like, here's
I think it's Rhaegal, my
collar. Yeah, and Tyrion undoes it. He rushes out, and Varys is at the top of the stairs going down, and he's like, if I ever think of doing that again, tell me not to, basically.
No, he says, next time I have an idea like that, punch me in the face.
Yeah, it's very cute. But at the same time, I will point out why it is, there's a theory about only Targaryens can ride dragons. And one of the thoughts about Tyrion was that he was, in fact, a bastard, that he was not Tywin's son, that maybe he was the child of the Targaryens came to visit or whatever, and that might be why he gets along with the dragons. We will see where that goes, if it goes anywhere, but it's an interesting question.
I'll cover Winterfell, then you can cover King's Landing, and then we'll cover Beyond the Wall and then Night's Watch. Okay. In Winterfell, Roose and Ramsay are informed by the new Lord Karstark that the hunters were killed, and Ramsay knows that they had help, because Sansa and Theon were not going to be able to kill a half a dozen people. And Ramsay wants to go to Castle Black and kill Jon just in case, just so that he can make sure that even a bastard will not inherit. And because he knows that it's a threat that anybody who has even close to the name Stark is going to be able to call into question your legitimacy. And then Ramsay says they have the biggest houses in the North support, and they have more men than the other houses combined, so they shouldn't fear any kind of war or backlash from this. Roose says to not get the reputation as a mad dog, or you will be treated like one. And then there's autocorrect. I meant to say Walda, but it says Salsa. Walda has given birth to a boy. Ramsay hugs Roose and says he can't wait to meet his brother. Roose says he'll always be his firstborn, and Ramsay says, thank you for saying that, that really means a lot, and then stabs him in the heart, much like he did to Rob that one time.
And that's so, what Roose did. There is justice on some level.
He everyone in the room, the people in the room are the new Lord Karstark and the Maester of Winterfell or whatever. And everyone just kind of accepts what just happened, just kind of casually, especially Lord Karstark. He's just like, he's my lord now. And the Maester's like, okay. And then Ramsay's like, hey, spread the word that Roose was poisoned by our enemies. And also, I'm the new lord now, and send for Walda and the baby. And so, and he's like, well, she's resting. And he's like, what? And did I ask? No. So bring me Walda and the baby, even though he's just been born and she just went through labor. And so they meet in the courtyard, and they're just kind of casually talking. Walda's like, hey, Lord Bolton sent for us. And we all know that he's now Lord Bolton, but she does not. And so they walk to the kennels, and Ramsay just slowly unlatches every kennel door, and he closed like the gate behind them. And so Walda is just kind of like, hey, it's really cold out, can we please bring the newborn baby inside? And he's just like, no, I am Lord Bolton, and you're gonna, and she immediately knows what's going to happen. She's like, please, please, I'll just go back to the Riverlands, please don't let this happen. And Ramsay's just like, sick him, and all of the hounds just devour them, both the baby and the mother. It's horrifying. He also says, she's like, oh, he's your brother, and he says, I prefer being an only child. I'm like, you are the most extreme only child ever, Jesus Christ.
So deranged. She is so deranged. Yes,
very deranged, and very effective. But anyway, that's that. Do you want to cover King's Landing?
Sure. Yeah.
Do you want to do King's Landing? Just do King's Landing, and then we'll do Beyond the Wall.
Yeah. So King's Landing, we've got a guy in a bar who is telling drunk guy stories, as they do, about Cersei's walk of shame. And so he's talking about how, oh, she saw me and she wanted to have me because I have a big penis. And so, you know, drunk guy, he keeps going. He then goes out in the hallway to pee, and Mountainstein appears.
I wrote down Mountainstein in my notes now.
Me too. Mountainstein appears, crushes his head against the wall. He comes back to the Red Keep, and Cersei's dressed for Marcella's funeral.
Before you get further, the whole Mountainstein thing, I know that he made a vow of silence, I will kill all of your enemies, all that stuff, like, go for the big guns, dude, like, go for the High Sparrow, don't go for this drunk guy saying, oh, she wanted to fuck me, like, are you kidding? There are, like, thousands of those people in the city, like, you can't kill them all. I mean, well, you could, but, like,
let's be clear about this too, guy. What is the fucking Mountain doing in a bar? Like, he's not going out
drinking. I mean, maybe Mountainstein's got a drink.
We have not seen that as a character trait, even when he was a normal person. So
No. Actually, that's incorrect. It was. Because Tywin, when he left the Harrenhal, told Arya not to let the Mountain drink too much.
But we haven't seen him ever.
But that was the other iteration of the Mountain. This is Mountainstein.
This is Mountainstein.
And maybe so it's all like more affected, I guess. I don't know. I really don't. Saying he should go for the High Sparrow and not for this mess.
Just do the big stuff, but he doesn't. So he goes back to, and Cersei notes that he has blood on him, doesn't care. And he's going to accompany her to the Sept for the funeral.
Another thing is that Cersei, I'm sorry to interrupt, Mom, but this weird thing that they focus on is that she's picked a thread from her dress. She's kind of fiddling with it, and then she drops the thread when she sees him. Is that her thread of sanity? Like, what the fuck is that supposed to mean?
No one gives a fuck, and this is part of the reason I am very frustrated with, like, some of the segments of this show that are very focused on some of these things. I just am kind of like...
Sorry, go ahead. I will not interrupt unless it is needed.
Thank you. So
Cersei's thread was really needed. So you just flipped me off.
I did. So the Kingsguard have been instructed not to let Cersei go to the Sept. The Mountain kind of like goes up to them, like he's going to kill all of them. They're terrified, but Cersei basically tells him to back down, and so he backs down because he only answers to her. We then see Tommen and Jaime at the Sept. Tommen is talking to Jaime about how he's like convinced that Cersei has, you know, done something awful, like killed Marcella. And Jaime's like, oh, she would never do that. And they have this big discussion. And, you know, Jaime's like, you need to go make amends with your mom. This is bad. And you can see that Tom is just very upset because he's weak and he can't even protect his own family. He then leaves Jamie because the High Sparrow shows up, and he leaves Jamie and the High Sparrow together. Jamie then threatens the High Sparrow, and the High Sparrow is like, yeah, I don't expect to live if you try to kill me, but I've got all these people, and all of the Faith Militant basically surround them. And he's like, together we can overthrow an empire. And so Jamie backs down from the threat that he was making. We cut to Cersei staring at the Sept. We will see the same view again later. Tommen comes in and wants to be stronger and wants her help, and they hug, and that's pretty much King's Landing.
Yep. Beyond the Wall. OMG, Bran is still in this show. This is what I wrote down. OMG, Bran is still in this show, and he has a new and better haircut, and there's a new three-eyed raven.
Max von Sydow.
Things I had questions about. Now. So they are the Bran and the Three-Eyed Raven, the new guy. He's still old, but he's new. But they are in a vision of the past at Winterfell when Ned was younger, fighting with his younger brother. What's his face? The one who got Benjen. Lost. Benjen. See, Benjen mentioned. We meet a young Lyanna who is older than both of them. I didn't know their age gaps, if I'm being honest. I thought Ned was the youngest. Lyanna was the youngest, and then Ned was like a middle child or something. I thought Benjen was always the oldest, but I was wrong. They summon
from a rules of succession standpoint, you don't give that to the person who's going the wall.
I thought Benjen was the oldest, didn't want the responsibility, went to the wall to like cede all the titles and such, and then Ned was just thrust into that role. But I was wrong. Also, they have an older brother who was there was the older one. So right, we never met that brother. One.
The oldest brother was betrothed to Catelyn, and then dad went and got killed by the Mad King.
Right. And we don't meet that guy, but I mean, whatever. We meet the people we are familiar with, apparently. They also summon, Lyanna summons a young stable boy named Willis, who is Jon Hodor. And he can talk. So what the fuck happened, Hodor? We find out in this season. We also see a younger old Nan who summons Hodor away, or
she's clearly mom.
Yes. Bran gets taken out of the vision because if they stay too long, they could drown in the vision or like stay in there forever and they would just live in the past or some shit. Bran just wants to feel happy again by seeing his home at full flourish and like seeing his father again. He just wants to be happy. But
yeah, this is very mirror of Erised to me. This is very much Harry sitting in front of the mirror of Erised.
I thought you said mirror. I was very confused. No. I was like Army Hammer, like acting like a puppy. Like what is that? Bran asks Hodor what happened, but Hodor says Hodor, like he doesn't know. And so then Mira's outside of the cave and she's just fed up with all this bullshit. She is fed up with just sitting in a cave watching Bran have his eyes roll into the back of his head and just have a vision for an hour. Like, she's over this. She wants to go home. She wants to go, like, literally anywhere else. Her brother's dead. She has no one to keep her company. Bran is just in visions all the time. Hodor can only say Hodor. And, I mean, not that, like, there's anything wrong with that, but it's not like you can have a full conversation with Hodor, can you?
No, I do love the conversation in a manner of speaking between Bran and Hodor. Like, I saw you, you know? You can talk.
Hold on. I know, it was very cute. Mira feels that she can't do anything to help. And she's like, there's a war coming and we're not fighting a war from in there. Absolutely not. What are we doing? And then the nymph says Bran needs her for when they leave the cave. Also, my question is, where is Summer? Is she just there?
Out eating. Somewhere? Out hunting. I don't
Probably.
Know. I don't know, but I do know where ghosted.
Yeah, that's all that matters. Summer's another direwolf that's out there. Nymeria might be out there. Shaggy Dog's still out there, but no, ghost is all that matters. I'm trying to keep track of all the wolves. Equal opportunist.
All right. But yeah, she basically says Bran needs her, and that is essentially all there is north of the wall at this point.
Yeah,
all right. So let's go to Castle Black. We've got Sir Alistair. He is making empty promises to Davos. And he makes more of them, and Davos is still fucking with him, but he's like, they're about to come in. We need to get ready to fight. And he's like, I apologize for what you're about to see.
And I've never been much of a fighter. I apologize for what you're about to see.
I love Davos. The Night's Watch guys begin hacking at the door. Ghost, I do love this shot because they've got Ghost. He's not quite up on the desk, but he's not up in a posture like he's going to kill somebody. Like he's like, bring it. He is up. He's ready. He's growling. Then they start hearing that there are giants at the gate.
Single giants, but yes.
Oh, yeah, but Wanwan is busting the gate down. It's Tormund to the and Ed to the rescue. Wanwan goes in. He gets shot with a crossbow, but he like grabs the crossbow and slams it against the wall and kills him. And so basically all but the evil six, the rebellious six, surrender.
The Sinister Six.
There we go. That's good. The Sinister Six get.
You realize that's arrested. A Spider-Man reference, right?
What?
You realize that's a Spider-Man reference, right?
Of course, sure. Ed arrests all of them, and you know, the other Night's Watch guys. And I think this is really what Alistair expected: is that like once John was out of the way, they'd all flock to him. But he's such a dickhead; they're gonna flock to him. So essentially, they had like a real leader like Ed in the way.
I would like to say Tormund has an amazing line. Alistair says, for thousands of years, the Night's Watch has held Castle Black against the wildlings. And then Tormund just says, until you.
It's so
fucking funny. I love it so much.
I love Tormund. I really love Tormund.
So they take the traitors prisoner and throw them in the cells. And Tormund gets people to prepare for a fire to burn John.
Right. So they're getting ready to burn John's body because Tormund's like, yeah, he's got to die. So,
Davos is dead.
So Davos goes to Melisandre to ask if she can bring John back and asks about that kind of magic. And she's like, she can't do it. Her beliefs are shaken. She thinks it's all a lie. You know, there are no gods. And Davos is like, look, fuck all the gods. You know, as far as I'm concerned, they're all the same. I'm not asking the Lord of Light. I'm asking you because I've seen you do some pretty incredible shit. Like a ghost baby that kills Renly. So she goes in and she's like, I've seen it done. I don't think I can do it. I don't have the power, but we'll go in there. So they go in. She washes John's body. As Ed, Tormund, and Davos are watching, Ghost is kind of curled up under the table nearby. It's very ritualistic. She cuts his hair and his beard and throws the hairs into a fire. Then she passes her hands over him and she's chanting multiple times, nothing happens, nothing happens, nothing happens, nothing happens. And she stops.
Can I quickly say what I wrote down while she was doing this? I said she performs a pretty random ritual by giving him a haircut and a bath and just chanting. It's just very funny to me. It's like,
a lot of rituals seem that way.
Everyone needs a new look for this season. Here's your haircut. Sorry, go ahead.
Tormund at this point just leaves, and then Melisandre leaves, then Ed, and Davos is the last. He seems just kind of depressed. He turns to go. He shuts the door, and the very end of the scene, Ghost wakes up and starts whining, and you see John's eyes open. He takes a giant breath.
He gasps awake.
does.
I love the look on his face, though. It's not just like I woke up from a sleep. I just woke up from being stabbed multiple times.
Yeah.
From like death. Like, yeah. It's crazy. Anyway, yeah. Best parts. John coming back to life. I think my best part in general is that the way they did this, it wasn't just out of the blue magic that you just randomly can do. It's the fact that we've seen it done before. Like, this was in season 2, this was established. Like, you can do this. Like, the Brotherhood Without Banners, they clear Thoros of Myr and Beric Dondarrion. Like, he's done this multiple times with him, and they had a conversation with Melisandre about this. So it's not outside the realm of possibility that she would be able to do this if they follow the same god and they like do the same shit. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that this could have happened. I think this is probably the best way it could have happened, instead of it just being like, oh, the knife wounds weren't that deep, he's fine. It's like, no, he was fucking dead, but we can bring dead people back to life, but only in special circumstances. Right. If we have a red priestess nearby and she has a lot of faith.
Right. I'll respond a bit later. Keep going.
Melisandre for doing a single good thing. Hodor. I love Hodor. Davos. He's so fucking funny. I love him so much. Oh, I'd like to also add Tormund. He's so freaking funny with that one line. Until you. You really fucked up, dude. Tyrion, I think, is very smart, and also, again, the iconic line, I can't ignore it. And yeah, I just, like, she's the mother of dragons, and she's kept the dragons as, like, prisoners. It's ridiculous that she did that in the first place. Arya, for being just persevering, and just in general, like, being smart about, like, how she's going to be able to get her eyesight back. She's gonna have to get it back from the people who took it from her in the first place. She needs to gain favor back with those people, get her eyesight back, and then focus on what she wants. Or just get back in the fold and do what they want you to do and just kind of stay in line. I mean, I think that she's just in general very smart for what she tried to decide to do. Killing Roose, like he was killed, like he killed Rob. I like the cemetery. I wish it wasn't Ramsay, but here we are. Baelon being killed, the makeup department, like Jesus Christ, those scars on John. Ooh, so well done. And the fact that they had to wash him on camera with the fake blood, making sure that, I'm sure there was a lot of blocking involved in like how to wash him. But, like, in just in general doing that. And also, like, Kit Harington for staying still that fucking long. Like,
oh, with rags, yeah,
like, all over him and, like, almost completely naked. Like, I remember there's this one blooper of, like, someone taking off his, like, little, like, cloth thing covering up his penis. But, like, he has, obviously, has a, like, shorts or, like, a Speedo thing on. But, like, he just, like, covers it up with his hands. It's
like,
just so funny.
Imagine, like, this whole thing going, I'm so ticklish, I would die. There's just, like,
no. Oh, it's so funny. No, and if it was cold water, just be like, oh. Just, yeah. No, it would have been so bad for me. And I've had to play dead multiple times. It's hard to stay still because you need to breathe. And same with, like, Marcella having to stay still and Joffrey having to stay still while, like, his parents are fucking right on top of him. And Tywin and all the people that had to play dead on screen. It's very, very hard. And it's impressive. Anyway, and also Bran's haircut. I love this haircut for him. I'm glad he looks normal and not like he has really long locks, because he was getting about like a bob and I was not loving it for him. And I'm so glad he got a haircut somehow in this like year that we have not seen him. I'm glad he got a fucking haircut. And I'm glad. And I know I'm kind of spoiling things for later of just how Bran's trajectory of a character in general. Like, he becomes very monotone later. And I'm not saying when's later, but it just in general, he becomes very just kind of like monotone, just kind of like meh. Now he still has like a heart and he still wants to see his childhood home. He still wants to see his father alive and enjoying life. These are the things he wants to see, and he misses home and all that stuff. He's still a human being. You know what I mean? I love seeing him like this, like appreciating what he has instead of just completely abandoning it and not feeling any remorse about it. Like leaving Rickon behind and not like thinking about, I want to go home with my family. And it's just like, yeah, no, I, that's all I've got to say about that. Anyway, best part for you.
Well, and so I did not really write down Bran. There is very much a Harry Potter kind of visual thing going on there, like, or some symmetry there, because, you know, he's don't get lost in the Mirror of Erised, don't get lost in the past with your family, don't, but you got better hair, much like after Goblet of Fire, Harry got better hair.
Yeah, you know, exactly like Goblet of Fire, not Goblet of Fire, Order of the Phoenix, he finally got better hair. But
yeah, you get better hair.
All I put down, let me be clear, is that fact that he got a haircut.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Yeah, so I what I wrote down, I had to add, I can't believe I didn't write down John, other than, like, because he's not a huge part of the episode in the acting department, but he is a huge part of the episode. Ghost, of course, because Ghost is awesome. Wanwan, I loved in this. Ed, Davos, Tormund, all of them are great. I love Hodor slash Witless. I love him in the flashback as well. I love Theon in this, honestly. I love that he's a little tormented, but he chooses not to put himself or Sansa at risk. And, you know, because he knows Bran will protect her. So he.
Yeah, I'll rebut that later. Go ahead.
Then I love Ned in the past because he does the exact things that Jon was doing when he was training people at the Night's Watch. He's like, he tells Benjen, like, this is how you defend yourself, or I'm going to knock you down again, or
yell. I'm going to ring your head like a bell. It's yeah, literally, exactly. It's almost exactly what Jon was saying.
Yeah, exactly. I love Tyrion in this, obviously. Brienne is great. I love Balon's death. I love Roose's death. Those are both fabulous to me. What were your worst parts?
I will say the whole thing with Theon and just like, I'm gonna go back home. I don't fucking care about the Ironborn. And again, last time you went home, you betrayed your friends, and you, and like, look how that turned out for you. Like, maybe you shouldn't go home. Your father doesn't fucking care about you. Your sister tried, and then you just, I understand you want to make up for what your sister had to go through to try to get you back, and then you just didn't let her. But I still think that maybe send her a raven first, or like something, just anything else. Like, I again, I understand where he's coming from with like, oh yeah, John will just fucking kill me if he sees me, because of regardless of if I just killed some farm boys, which is still a bad thing to do. I don't know. Either way, I think Theon was not my favorite part of this episode. He was a favorite part of the last episode, but I love that him and Sansa have this trauma bond. I didn't love that they had to get trauma to get there, but like, I'm glad that they do have this bond now. Like, she's hugging him, and she's even willing to touch him. She wasn't even willing to touch him before, but now she's like, oh my god, Theon, you were like the closest thing I have to family right now. Oh my god, you helped me, you saved me, you like kept Miranda from like gutting me like a fish, and like, thank you so much for doing this for me. And I'm glad that she's, I love that she can forgive but not forget in that way of like, she knows that he, what he did was wrong. She knows that he did all these awful things to her family and to all that, but in many ways, in her eyes, he has repented for that through losing everything that he had. And by like being tortured and all this stuff, he has in many ways made up for that.
I want to add Sansa as the best part, because honestly,
I think Sansa's probably closer to a best part than Theon is for me.
Yeah, she has a lot of growth and a lot of appreciation for, I should have paid more attention to the signs before, and she's getting smarter. And so I would include her as possibly the best part of this episode.
And appreciating her family, like Arya, when she hears about Arya, she just really appreciates that she's alive and at least at that time was okay. She doesn't know she's blind right now in Braavos, but who knows? It's every time I like think of a Stark in a different location, it's like Emily in Paris, like the kind of like the title version. It's Arya in Braavos.
Yeah.
It's Sansa in the wilderness. Bran beyond the wall. That's actually the most catchy. Rickon at Last Hearth, and John is dead, but anyway,
John is beyond our reach. Anyway,
worst parts.
Yes,
Tommen not letting Cersei go to the funeral for her own daughter really, really fucks with me, especially since he doesn't have like a real excuse for it. Like, he does mention, oh yeah, no, but you would have been taken by those people again. I'm like, fuck that. Like, bring an army. Like, make sure she doesn't. Like, Tom, it's not that hard to stand up for yourself. And Cersei has a fucking mountain stein next to her. I'd like to see any of those fuckers try. Like, I think that it's so stupid that he's just like, yeah, no, you can't say goodbye to your, like, only daughter. Sorry. Like, you just can't. And I think it's so fucking stupid. And, let's see. The waif, again, for being a bitch. Killing Walda and the baby is just so awful. I understand why he did it. He wanted to secure his direct line for being the warden of the North and all that stuff. But, like, Jesus Christ, man. Like, that? Or at all. Like, just, like, let them go back to the Riverlands. But then again, like, if they were ever, if that child were to grow up and ever find out what happened, they might try to retake the North and all that stuff, even though... and just Ramsay being a little bastard he is, just trying to fuck shit up. And Baelon for being a bitch.
Yeah, I don't give look, he gets his in this episode, so I feel fine with that. But my worst parts, I'm gonna kind of go backwards. Sir Alistair, fucking awful. The High Sparrow, because, you know, his power grab shit is really not okay. Especially, you're supposed to be someone who's not after power and stuff, and you totally are.
Absolutely. And I'd like to add to that, like, when he's talking to Jaime, Jaime's talking to him, and he's being his, like, humble little self of, yeah, no, strike me down, we all deserve it, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, all of his army and his groupies and his, like, whatever, they come out and they have all these weapons. And I'm just like, okay, so you aren't offering yourself up, really. And all, for all intents and purposes, you're just threatening this guy and making sure that you don't die. Like, you're not doing what you're saying. Like, you're just being an awful person.
Yes, all of that. Tommen's weakness, it's pathetic. Lord Karstark, because
being okay with this?
Like, he's totally fine with this Ramsay horseshit. You stand there and watch him stab his father to death. How do you think things are going to turn out for you, you dumbass? But okay. Well,
that's one thing, but also, like, he does mention, I'm under the impression that all he knows about his father is that his brother died and also his father was beheaded by Robb Stark. I don't know if he knows the full story behind that. He definitely doesn't. And so I'm just kind of like, dude, your father betrayed him and killed innocent children, and you expect him to just get away with that? That's not okay. And but I'm not saying, like, be okay with your father being decapitated, because I can't say, well, Ned's a completely different story, but either way, I think that he's an uppity bitch, and he's just okay with seeing people butchered in front of him.
But he sees it as a way to power, which of course people do. And of course, the most god awful in this episode is Ramsay. I cannot get past it's just so casual.
Yeah. I wanted to be an only child.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the thing with Roose is it's much more calculated and controlled with Roose. Mm-hmm. When he kills Robb Stark, he has the whole power of the whole Lannister army and everything else behind him. When Ramsay does this, he doesn't care if anybody's behind him. He's just doing what he feels like doing. And it is just fucked up and evil and wrong. So, yeah.
I would like to say, I think that his mindset at this point, and I'm not trying to, like, read into the psycho serial killer's mindset. He's a really fucked up mind. But at this point, everyone's kind of been hyping him up in these past two episodes. Like, the last episode, even Roose was like, you're accomplishments on the battlefield were amazing, and also your ideas about attacking him at night and whatever, doing that whole thing and, like, setting his stuff on fire, that was a great idea. So he's been hyped up in the battlefield and out by his father and by everybody else around him. He also mentions in this episode that he has the armies of the biggest three houses, and they're just going to follow a Bolton regardless. And he has the Maester say, and obviously, like, I don't know why he trusts Lord Karstark, but I mean, Lord Karstark seems to be a crazy person anyway, so whatever. But he has, like, he puts out there that he's been poisoned by enemies. I don't know who, but I mean, they must
that,
have been.
Yeah, that Roose was poisoned by it.
Roose was, yes. But I think that in general, he just thinks, okay, well, those armies will translate to me, and so I don't have to worry about this. And if anyone brings up I'm a bastard, oh no, my poor mother, my like stepmom or whatever, she died in childbirth and the baby didn't survive. Oh no. So I think that him in general, I think he is has a calculated plan in front of him, and I think that people have been hyping him up enough to make him think that he can accomplish this. And so I think that in general, I think he does have a plan. Is it as calculated as Roose's? Not necessarily, but like I think his plan with Karstark included somehow works to his advantage. So,
well, I don't see it as being as I think it feels more arbitrary, and maybe it's just how it's portrayed, but it feels a lot more quixotic, I guess, or just, you know, for the moment. Anyway, how did you grade this episode?
I gave it an A-. I think a lot happens in this episode, and I like a lot of it. Like all these deaths of bad people. This is what I wanted in season 5. I thought that Balon died in season 5, and I was very happy about that. And then he didn't, and I was like, what the fuck? And like those leeches took forever to take toll. Jesus Christ, like Red God or whatever the fuck your name is, Lord Light. Like what? And I think that just, and I was so surprised that it was in this episode that Roose died, because like I remember there being a scene talking about it later on, but I for whatever reason, like that entire thing happened later in my head. And so when I was watching and then she gave birth to a boy and I was like, oh shit, it happens now.
Yes.
Ooh, ooh. And so I will say this is more exciting than the last episode by far. It is. Oh, yeah. And I think that that's why the last one was a B and this one's an A-. And I stand by my decision about the John thing. If this happened in the last episode, I think we would all be like, that was cheap. Like, you just killed him for nothing. Like, are you kidding? You didn't even let anything fall out because of it. But they let it play out a little bit in the last episode. And does it make that episode a little bit more boring? Yes. But I think that it's less of a cheap trick to, like, let it happen in this episode. And yeah, him not to, like, talk in this episode. Just, like, have him wake up.
Yeah. So I gave this episode an A- also. I agree about the John storyline. I'm not changing the fact that last episode was the scene the way it was.
That's fine.
But the bottom line is that this episode, and I agree with you, like I was not clear on when Balon Greyjoy died in my head. I would say that this is another plus for season 5 that there wasn't a whole bunch of Greyjoy bullshit on Pike. But
but to be fair, this Balon shit, the Greyjoy shit,
this Greyjoy shit. You're sounding like the hound there. The fishmuckers.
You're a little Irish.
I don't know. The shite. I think in general, like, I like Euron better as a villain than Balon ever was.
We haven't even gotten started with all crazy ass Euron. This is
I know, but bad. Euron's fucking insane, and I think that Euron is the energy I needed on Pike, not just a misogynistic fish fucker. Wow, that was trying to say that 20 times
hey,
fast.
Hey, Balon's a fish fucker too. Don't be confused.
I'm aware that Balon's a fish fucker. I called him a fish fucker. But Euron definitely is. But like, I think in general, I think that Euron is the energy I wanted from Pike. Just the people who've been isolated on an island gone absolutely batshit insane and just wants a power grab. And I think Euron, especially, I like that Euron's like a sexier version of him, of like Baelon, like just being like, I mean, we need a little bit of sex on there because the people we've got, sorry, no.
Yar is not your people. I get it.
No, Yar is not.
And neither is Baelon. Get that.
I'm not saying that those aren't attractive people in their own right. I'm just saying we need a little pirate in there because we weren't getting the pirate vibe.
I will say this about the Greyjoys, what should be happening there, and it is a little more, and I don't know if you ever watched the show Vikings. I loved Vikings, the original.
I think I watched a little bit of it with you, but not too
much. Absolutely loved the original. And there is that crazy seafaring, pirating, pillaging element.
We haven't been getting that shit from them.
Right. Yeah. You get that from Euron for sure. And that's going to be a lot more going forward.
That's the energy I wanted. And also now that Roose is dead, Ramsay can just go batshit. And I mean, like, that's so much more interesting than Roose being at the season.
There is batshit in this season.
I know that, Mom, but I'm just saying for the audience's sake, I just love that Ramsay now is set free of all of this, like, oh, I have to like talk to daddy first, or I have to talk to whatever first. No, you don't anymore, sweetie. You have free reigns to sick your dogs on whoever the fuck you want, and it's gonna get messy. And so I'm just like, I'm so excited. I just love that they kind of unleashed all of these villains on the world that I'm just like, okay, those are interesting villains that are batshit insane that I'm like ready to see. You know what I mean? I don't know why I'm so happy. Maybe I was just in a good mood when I wrote these notes. I watched them earlier today. And so I'm just like really in a good mood, ready to start this season because I know I love this season, especially the way it ends. Like, oh, it's so good.
How much box wine have you had, little girl?
Just a cup. And I've been drinking a bit of water. I'm just very hyped up about the season.
Well, we are going to have big fun this season. We hope that you join us. And
cheers.